I heard, well, no, okay, so it got like boop, 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 and then I answered. I did have it set to auto answer on some of those old little Android boxes that I had way back in the day when we would do like four lines per thing. Boy, was that not worth it. It seriously wasn't.
You think of all the time spent.
The time and money. It's not, I mean, time, money, effort, brain power, like brain space to try and think of how can I do this on the cheap and how can I put this together in a way that would work. And there's just so much. Yeah, it was just a bad thing to try and bet on it being the best way to do it. I've got a good setup now. I feel like I do. I don't talk to more than one person at a time anyway. And if I do, I guess getting into almost the topic, we can actually have a real life human conversation before we start our program here. But getting briefly dipping my toe into the topic, I'll dip a pinky toe real quick. I use Google Hangouts to chat with a group of game friends, folks that are across the country that play the same game as me, and they'll just create a running Google Hangout where the URL is sent out to the group. You can join it if you want, but what it does is it rings on every single device I have Google Hangouts connected to, which is every single computer in the house, every single mobile phone and like tablet in the house. It's just a bad situation. They handle it very, very poorly. They handle notifications very poorly too, but
they being the Google machine.
Yeah. Right. The Google, the big Googler,
the big Googler. That's like the FaceTime. I just before I called you, I got a FaceTime call, or not FaceTime, a phone call. I think it's called
ye old timey phone call. Yeah.
The computer starts ringing and the phone starts ringing and yeah.
Oh, that's right.
They do the same thing. Apparently that's getting better in the new High Sierra or something. I don't know. We'll see. But
it seemed to work okay when I was on an Apple computer, because it was nice getting the messages, getting iMessages and text messages and stuff on the computer.
Yeah.
That is for sure something I miss a lot having moved to Android. But the phone calls, yeah, they would show up like a little late, or you go to reach for the answer button and it's like, oh no, sorry, you missed it.
Yeah.
You didn't do well. How are you? How you doing?
I'm good. The way that you answer that to a friend, that you're just, you don't really want to actually have any more deeper conversation, I'm good.
Okay. All right.
In the sense that I just discovered that I forgot to submit and pay my GST for the first quarter of, GST being the government sales tax, goods and services sales tax. Anyway, the Canadian government, where I, as my business, I collect GST and then I submit it back to the government. So in effect, I've been borrowing from the government for the last couple of months. It's not.
You submit quarterly?
Yes.
Okay.
Thirdly? Quarterly, yeah.
Thrice per year, yeah.
And so it's, you know, you all of a sudden you have less money, or you owe more money, or you owe money that you didn't think you owed. And so that's a nice surprise to just, when my accountant emails and saying, is this, just, I don't see a GST payment. And I'm sure I remember. Well, here's actually the funny thing. I remember paying it, which I didn't. Yeah. I've checked everywhere. I didn't. Two,
man.
Or B, I also remember tweeting that, hey, everybody, just a reminder for small businesses and whatever, GST is due on the 30th or whatever, of April, I think it was, which I didn't either. I actually went back and searched my Twitter account. I didn't do that either. So somehow I have this like phantom memory, and maybe it's from a year ago, of doing that very thing of like, almost smugly reminding everybody, hey, pay your GST, you dummies, because who would forget about that? So luckily the interest is pretty cheap. So.
Well, that's good. I have recurring tasks for things like that, that for sure, like if I know that I'm going to put it off until the date is nearly due, like imminently due, I'll put it as a recurring task set, I don't know, maybe a week before it's supposed to happen. And then I'll put a secondary reminder on my calendar itself to say like, hey, this is the absolute last day that your credit card can be paid is this day. But the credit card payments task is on my Todoist as a recurring task every month.
Oh, so it's more. Yeah. See, I do it as a, I get the notification that it's out, which is my statement. Then whatever the due date is, I have a Todoist item a week before. And then I actually this, not that this is the calendar episode, but I turned on, I hadn't turned on in a while. Maybe it was from our discussion that I turned on the calendar. So it actually does put on my calendar at Todoist.
Yeah.
And I originally had thought it was really annoying, but it just nicely hides it, at least on Mac calendar or whatever it's called. It's just at the top of the calendar. So, once you're into the day, you sort of miss it. But at least then I can see it there too. It's kind of like that double reminder. But yeah, I do the week before for anything like that, like bills or credit cards or statements or payments or whatever. I do the a week ahead of time, but obviously just not the GST. Payment clearly, because it wasn't I did this thing, like I, when she emailed me, I like searched through the bank history, the PayPal history, not that I could PayPal the government, I just checked there just in case, and also my Todoist history, because it's nice how you can search completed tasks and search for like a dollar amount or a task description or anything like that, and it was never there. So
now, is there anything in your lizard brain that kind of gets you, it like gives you that dopamine hit when you do reach through your history and see like, oh yeah, the thing I was looking for, one, it's here. Two, I was so detail oriented to actually document this and put this down. And now I'm sort of kind of being rewarded in the future for going back and looking it up and seeing if it's there.
I would have loved to have had that dopamine hit today. That would have been awesome.
Yeah.
That would have been like $1,000 dopamine hit, but it's patreon.com/iChris, by the way.
I guess I have sort of an analogous thing that I do that I feel like I've said this before, but we've only had four episodes. So maybe I probably haven't said this before. Maybe I've just said it to you at a separate time. But one day, I know that it's going to come to pass that I am arrested for a crime I didn't commit. And what I will thoroughly enjoy is reaching deep into my Google history and saying, no, actually, on the date of August 14th, 2015, I was here. I was at Ye Olde Pizza Restaurant. And was not at the scene of the crime, but thanks for playing. I don't need a lawyer. Thank you.
Gone. You'll be able to smugly tell whether it's your wife or Kenny or your friends or whatever who always mocked you for checking into Foursquare or Swarm or wherever.
That's right.
All those years of like doing that, you'd be like, see, it paid off.
Exactly. I was in the car from 8:15 to 9:26, and then I got out of the car and walked 15 steps, and yeah. The whole quantified self thing and the checking in and the Google, the big Googs has your whereabouts at all times is one of those things that hasn't paid off, I feel like, in the right way. Not in the like, oh, I've dug into my past and found something interesting. Google tries to surface that on their photo section, but never really in the locations as smartly as something like Swarm would. But Google's still tracking it. I don't know. Maybe to make my life better. Maybe to eventually start serving me ads through my eyeballs as I walk from places I visited before. I honestly, I don't know. I don't know what they're trying to do.
It feels like that whole pathway of like notifying you of past memories is wrought with peril. That as an engineer, if I was an engineer, I would be terrified to start implementing that because. How do you know that that picture is not someone that they're going to show you is like the last time you saw your dog or your wife or your kid or,
like seriously, kind of very, very seriously, there are those moments on my photo list that are on my camera roll that I absolutely have those exact feelings about either let's say a pet. We keep the string going from our last conversation
one of the,
about one of getting the cats. A phone call about your dog dying. Yeah, exactly. I have those types of photos in here for the sole purpose of like, yeah, this was a moment in time. It's not great, but it's a moment in time. I don't want to be remembered of it. I will, on the off chance that I'm scrolling past it, be remembered about that particular situation.
Be reminded, be remembered.
Yeah. It depends. If I'm the one in my camera roll, we have a really bad situation going on.
I will remind you.
Yeah. Will you remember me?
Annie Lennox? No.
The same kind of thing happens when Google goes through. It hasn't sent it to me yet, though. It has not sent the exact particular photo I'm thinking of. It will send other cat photos, but not the one I'm thinking of. But it's slippery slope, man. I know Facebook's gotten in trouble for it before. I know Google is doing this. TimeHop was the other one that would kind of surface old tweets and old Facebook updates and old photos and text messages. They did text messages for a while, which just seems, wow, why would you ever send those to a service that is about digging up your past?
Yeah. So do you turn on I know the Google's has the, like, now you can share your location automatically with people, kind of like to find your friends on iPhone, I think, right?
Yes.
Is that a thing? And do you enable that, or is that obviously you would not, because that would be creepy?
Maybe this is one of those things where you and I differ completely, but I do have it on and I like it a lot. The main reason is in my family, a lot of people commute for their jobs, and they're knowing their availability without having one to text message them or to call them on the phone and disrupt whatever driving situation they may have. Either it's plugged into Bluetooth or it's not. It really depends on the kind of day they're having. Knowing that either they're in transit or they're home is vital to whether or not I'm going to initiate contact with them.
You'll check that before you would call somebody. You'll just be like, hey, where's Kenny? Yeah. Or where's my dad or whatever?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Exactly. And I guess secondarily, I do use it as a way to decide on meal prep, seeing how, like, basically finding out where my wife is on her journey home once she shared her location with me, to decide when I start certain dishes for dinner, and so it's piping hot when she actually walks through the front door.
Ah.
That's kind of it. Are you sort of on the opposite spectrum of this, or is our name of high contrast not going to live up to its, you know, true potential?
I know in launching the show this week, I kind of realized anyways, in writing some of our little copy or whatever tweets and stuff, and like, we're actually not that, we don't disagree that much as we set out to, perhaps.
I think it is a good challenge and potentially a good way to kind of poke the bear a bit, right? And be like, look, guys, yes, we realize that this is a podcast with two middle-aged white males from first world countries that there is a whole bunch of people out there just like that. That have podcasts already. I'd like to think that the title kind of gets us to move in a direction where we do find our differences and maybe think about things a little more intellectually, but maybe not. Maybe it's just a joke fest. It's a Canadian and Californian joke fest. So
the highest contrast is the difference between your tan and my non-tan in January.
Exactly. So the temperatures by which we live our lives, yeah, are a complete, yeah, complete 180.
High contrast temperature is the actual full title. We just couldn't fit it on the album. It doesn't look so good on t-shirts.
No, it doesn't.
I forgot. I think the location stuff is, I alternate, I go from high contrast from creepy to amazing on it. And so when I think of just myself as an individual, I would share it with the world and not care a bit. But then I think of like family and especially kids, and then I get kind of creeped out at the idea of that. And so even something like Snapchat just recently added location sharing inside the app,
right?
Which is, again, very either very creepy or very cool, and has the potential to be like, even in someone's example of it, I was just reading a bit about it, and you know, you can see that your friends are out at a club somewhere and you're like, oh great, let's all go. Or you can see that your friends are out at a club somewhere and they didn't invite you and you don't want to go. That whole thing. And plus never mind the privacy thing, because where they, in my mind anyways, they kind of enabled it and didn't tell people that that was going to actually be on a map somewhere. If you had shared stuff before, all of a sudden people could see your general location and know sort of where your house was. Like we discussed in a previous episode, by and large, often just use the default, say, sure, yeah, share my location. Yep, whatever. I don't really know what that means, but sure, I trust your app.
Allow. Yeah, who cares? Just do it.
So like I was looking around just my city and seeing some mom showing her kid jumping on their bed in their house or whatever. And it's like, you probably didn't intend for some random middle-aged tech dude to be able to see that, you know, and when you originally shared it, or maybe you weren't aware that you were doing that, but that definitely wasn't who you were planning to sort of share that with. It's kind of Snapchat especially gives the impression that you can't see it unless I follow you and I know if you follow me kind of idea. So,
but it's in the same vein, especially I watched the video that you put together just briefly about the public aspect of that. And how it is kind of difficult to tell, one, who those people are, but two, if they show any personal identification type things in the video, you could kind of ascertain their, who they are. You don't know if your video is probably being put out there publicly. I guess if you're sharing it on Snapchat or if you're used to putting things out publicly, I don't use that platform very much, if at all.
Well, it's one thing to sort of out there and people using Snapchat, but then I actually just the other day, my nephew, who's 12, I think, he's all of a sudden just followed or friended me or whatever it's called on Snapchat. And so it's like, I haven't had a discussion with my sister to know if she's aware even that he's on there and B, if she knows what all is going on there. And it's 99% of it could be completely innocent and just goofy fun filters, face filter stuff, right? If he snaps a picture of their house and then snaps a picture of his room and then snaps a picture of her credit card bags or something, you know, it kind of is if somebody's paying attention to any of that kind of stuff, you can sort of suss out what's going on and what you need to do in order to steal a bunch of money or worse, I guess. And so,
yeah, I get the way around that potentially would be just the hyper awareness of how things work and the understanding of how Google Maps is using your data, who that data is available to. Google does a pretty good job at reminding you every 2 weeks, maybe, hey, by the way, just letting you know, you're sending your location to the following people that are listed in this email. If you'd like to change that, you can change that right now. And they send that periodically just to kind of update you on, you know, hey, did you forget about this? Or, you know, did you mean to do this kind of thing? Or you turned on a default and maybe you didn't mean to. So they do, maybe this is an early adopter sort of thing where they want to make sure that the friction of rolling the service out to everyone eventually is going to be pretty seamless, but what they're trying to do is close that understanding gap of you know that you're doing this right, you understand what you're getting into. The one thing that you can't prevent from that situation though is someone hacking into it, someone getting the password to your account and reverse engineering where is my device or find my iPhone or that kind of thing and saying, okay, you're right here and now I no, one, that you're not home, and two, I can go take your TV or whatever. But that's, to try to not keep my tinfoil hat on too tight, I try not to think about that stuff too much because it does hinder progress on these location-based services or a lot of these different products that we use every single day, Snapchat and Google Maps and stuff like that. Getting me to buy into it, super easy. Getting the rest of my family to buy into it, who may not want to close that knowledge gap and understand how every single button inside of Google Maps works, a little more difficult.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and plus you get paid with.
I get the big bucks.
A new Porsche for understanding. Every time somebody shares their beer location or whatever. So
it's actually embedded. Yeah, it's in the car. It's the Porsche branded phone. They make those, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
They make Ferrari phones. I know that.
I noticed the app of your development career currently. That was terrible.
You just I work for Untapped. Yeah, okay, Chris.
I was trying to be sketchy about it or whatever, but
if you go to my Twitter, it's literally the first thing I say. So
I had a new app update out, and there was actually a misspelling in the grammar mistake in there, but
that happens pretty much every update. Greg, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry.
Come on, Greg.
Yeah. Come on, bud.
Greg.
No, it is a real small team over at Untapped. When we put our products out, we typically don't take a look at the release notes, and they are written sort of after the fact. We're on a very, very agile type of development cycle over at Untapped. It's a small team. So I'm the only one working on the graphic interface for the consumer app, which is the thing that normies can download and drink their beers and log them in.
It's nice.
It's a good gig.
You're the GUI guy.
It's a real good gig. I am the GUI guy.
All right.
I mean, it's not really the name I'd like.
Judging by the morning show's episode last, artwork for the last most recent episode anyways, I think you're the GUI guy, but.
It took me a really long time to find the right photo of someone getting slimed. It's a lot of slime, a lot of green slime. We talked briefly this morning about a new Nintendo announcement. E3 was actually a couple of weeks ago, and they, for some reason, left this out. I feel like the news would have totally dominated at least part of Nintendo's press conference. But yesterday they announced one of the new Nintendo Entertainment System Supers, little tiny box.
That was really confusing what you just said.
Yeah.
Super Nintendo Entertainment System?
Yeah, the Super one.
Right.
The Super one.
Yeah. Which
I was doing like a Spanish thing.
Right.
Maybe that didn't work out.
I don't speak Spanish, so that's probably why I didn't.
Okay. All right.
They're kind of doing this retro thing, right? Where advertisements are playing and I can't stop them. Sorry.
On the website. Yeah. Oh no. On the website.
Where the Super NES, they had the Nintendo Entertainment System as a reissued last year and promptly sold out. And now they're doing the next one, the Super Nintendo, which I think is even more right in my wheelhouse. It's kind of like the topic that we were sort of circling around was video games in general, but like this kind of hits at kind of when the age I was when I sort of really got video games. I had a Nintendo before this, the original Nintendo Entertainment System with Mario Brothers and mm-hmm. stuff, but Super Nintendo, which I didn't actually ever own, but was something my friend owned, and would go over to his house, play in his basement with, you know, like Street Fighter and I forget all the other games that I played. Was kind of like that, the coming of age, as it were, video game console. Well,
your first first sort of solo excursion into the video game world, maybe, let's say.
Yeah.
Like less guided from a parent or from someone else playing and you watching. More like, hey, I can take control of this controller and do stuff on my own or play with a friend or that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went from Atari, Nintendo Entertainment System, Sega Genesis, and then my friend. It was that was kind of like the thing where it was just like Pepsi, Coke, PC, Mac. There's always like, it seems like culturally we have to have left, right, you know, one. It's the digital bits, I guess, zero or ones, right?
This or that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so I chose Sega Genesis, but then my friends all chose Super Nintendo, and so I was left in the lurch, as it were. I had lots of fun on Sega Genesis, but yeah.
Yeah. You didn't become like the, oh no, Chris has the Genesis. He's got what do they have? They had Sega CD, they had, what were the other, because Genesis was 32-bit, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, it had Sonic, it had
Tommy Lasorda,
it had baseball. a bunch of really great stuff. I kind of, you know, my first experience, I think, with video games in general, and I'm going to say NES because I can't stand folks who say NES. Sorry. But my
Kyle will not stand for that.
I absolutely will not. We're going to finally disagree on something, Chris. My first experience was with Duck Hunt on NES.
Oh, yeah.
it was, yeah, it came with that proprietary controller. You shoot the gun at the screen and the duck falls to the ground and the dog gets it, Kyle, and laughs.
Do you know what I just remembered I had? Did you? I don't know if you had this. I had the power glove.
I did not have the power glove. No.
Your childhood just died, I think, because...
Yeah. Was that one of the, I mean, it was a controller, right? It had a bunch of buttons on it.
Well, it's kind of like precursor to the Wii and stuff, because it had like the sensor bar you had to put on your TV, and then you could play like Punch Out with it, where you'd actually punch this towards the screen and dodge.
Got it.
And there was a little controller on it, and it just looked really futuristic. And even today, if they put that out, people would go gaga over it, because it looks futuristic and cool, and it's like this... Yeah, this thing you have to wear and kind of makes you look like a robot. I think we had it for like up until a few years ago and then sold it in a garage sale even. That's how long it
stuck. Oh, man. Around, so. Well, do you know if it was still working?
I didn't have
as intended.
What did you say? NES? Is that what we're supposed to say?
NES. Yeah. Yeah, NES. NES.
I didn't have a NES to test it with. So.
Okay.
Or a SNES. Yeah. Either. I didn't have a SNES. But yeah. I started my journey of video games way back on an Atari. I don't know if you go back that far.
I don't. I feel like I grew up kind of in a strange way. We had internet in our house really, really early, because my dad actually worked for a company that did online games at a time when stuff was coming out still on like 13 different floppy disks, like the 5-inch right. size.
5 1/4.
And yeah. So I feel like my video game and computer history is a little clouded in that side of things and very much influenced by it. But it all started with Nintendo for me, with the original system. No Atari in our house.
So were you like were other friends and stuff, school friends and stuff, like fascinated with going to your house because you had access to this stuff? Or was it like you were...
No, believe it or not. Not until I would say probably fifth or sixth grade did that change dramatically when my dad actually started working for Pogo Games. You remember Pogo Games? Computer, EA affiliate kind of.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Associated with AOL Games, which moved to Pogo Games and then became kind of bought into the whole EA Games system. Eventually shut down, but we had so many like maybe single A, double A EA titles, stuff like Tiger Woods Golf, the NBA games that nobody cared about, like second rate skating games, things that just didn't get, they weren't the AAA titles, they weren't the huge Madden, they weren't
right,
stuff like that. But we would get those kind of in a big group box for free from him and just play the heck out of them. And I feel like some of my very formative years of modern gaming for sure came from those times. But not up until that point, we weren't really the family that we, you know, folks didn't come over to your house because you had the arcade thing in the garage or anything like that. I did, however, at some point get access to at one of my friend's houses the Virtual Boy, which was sort of one of my first experiences with those. Didn't it have a motion controller? It must not have, because it was stationary. It sat on a desk. You had to sit down and put your face in it. Maybe I'm thinking about just putting my face in it.
Yeah, it's like the precursor to VR, virtual reality.
Yeah, right? not even. It was like just, it was like strapping a television to your face where it just moved a bunch of red lines and you could barely tell what was going on. But that was sort of like the, we got to go over to Garrett's house because Garrett's got the Virtual Boy and no one on the block had it.
That
man,
I somehow skipped over that one. That looks kind of freaky. Branding wise, kind of sounds kind of freaky. And I remember hearing about it, but never actually played one or had friends who had one that they told me. But
yeah, but it was the thing that kind of connected you to other kids in the neighborhood. The video games too, for me, were as a small boy, it was the reward system by which my parents would get me to do things and or help me through traumatic like childhood things. How old was I? 8, maybe. Went through a series of kidney surgeries as a child where kind of through part of it, it did not look like I was doing so well. Like I don't know if you would say that I wasn't going to make it, but it was not in a good way. I was definitely not in a good way. And kind of coming out of that, I vividly remember receiving a normal Game Boy at the end of that. Why? I don't know. I'll have to ask my parents, but it seemed like, hey, you made it. So here's a Game Boy.
Hooray for kidneys. And
yeah, very, very, well, sitting in a hospital bed for that long.
Yeah, no kidding. I
mean, yeah, but it became one of those things that like, okay, this is sparking me to want to do this more, want to play this more. I'm enjoying this a lot.
So do you remember which game, were you like the Tetris and stuff on Game Boy?
There was Tetris on Game Boy. There was a Power Rangers game on Game Boy. Yoshi's Cookies was on Game Boy. Would play that a lot. It got me into wanting to play different games on the Game Gear eventually, maybe 3 years later or so. Game Gear was that big, huge blue behemoth where you had to put like 8 batteries into the back of it. It almost looks like a Switch, basically. It was color screen, probably 16-bit. And we would play stuff like Echo the Dolphin. And I say we, my brother, Kenny, and I would definitely take turns with these games because we did not each have one of these. He would probably get the hand-me-downs a lot of times. I mean,
yeah, that's what I was going to ask you about. Like, because I had two sisters who couldn't have cared too much about the video games at all, and so I was fairly left to my own devices as far as other than fighting over maybe watching stuff on TV that when I wanted to, you know, play Tommy Lasorda baseball or NHL or whatever it was at the time. But now having two sons and a daughter who are all into video games, now we're like screen time is kind of this negotiation process where my oldest son tries to convince the other two that they'd really love to play on the iPad because that would be the best thing to do is play on the iPad so that he can have the Xbox One all to himself playing NHL. Because he doesn't like playing with other people, namely his brother, because his brother isn't as good and gets distracted and always wants to play goalie, which if you've ever played a video game hockey game, you know playing goalie is a terrible idea because it's just impossible. So he routinely tries to discourage or convince the other two not to play video games on the Xbox. The only sort of common ground they all have is they do all like playing Minecraft. That's kind of the universal glue that holds them together. So what was your experience with Kenny?
Very, I would say it was a lot of, it was a let's play, but like in person, let's say, where he would watch me play a lot of times. And then if I couldn't beat the level, we'd probably have like these, hey, if you can't beat that in 2 tries, I get to try next.
Right.
Very, you know, almost democratic, seeing that it was just the two of us. When we were younger, it was just the two of us. And I feel like we would police ourselves. Maybe I'm misremembering a bit of this, but I can hope potentially that it was very civil. Yeah. And of course we played well
Smash
together.
Smash cut to Kenny.
Yeah. Screaming and having my fist just in his face. Yeah. I don't know. The video games are kind of divisive in that way where it's like, I want the control. Or the literal controller, and I want to control what we do, what we play, how this goes down. I think folks are pretty much like that still when it comes to games, and I probably am too. But I don't know.
It takes a special skill for someone. I had a friend growing up who, Mark, if you're out there, hello, who loved, much preferred to watch me play video games than actually play along, which at that stage, that was like high school and beyond kind of thing. I was actually more interested in having someone to play with. Like it was like the Doom and the Dune and, you know, sort of real-time strategy games were coming out and first-person shooters where we'd go to like my dad's old office and we'd set up a network LAN and play Wolfenstein against each other and run around, you know, that kind of stuff. And so you want actually other people because they didn't have, a lot of the games didn't have like, they might have a first-person angle, but it's the multiplayer version was kind of like either everybody's multiplayer or it kind of sucks because you're just running around by yourself. Did you have, do you remember having like limits on how much video games you could play as a kid? Like with, or I guess maybe your dad was kind of like, of course you'll play video games. That's how I get.
No. See, back when we were kids, it was a mixture of, there wasn't enough time, I would say, to really, really get into playing video games for a long time. It wasn't until the days and the years of being able to drive yourself around and go to where you wanted to go that games really took over a lot of actual hours and hours and hours and hours of time. And we would do stuff like beat Star Fox 64 in 3 hours or something and like set the timer and try and speed run Star Fox 64. But other than that, we would have a place down the street that we would call the LAN shop, L-A-N shop.
Nice.
And it was basically just a hallway with a bunch of super souped up computers, all with a huge library of games, Counter-Strike, and we would mainly play Counter-Strike, Unreal Tournament 2K4, a bunch of first-person shooters, all the games that you would want to play together with folks where your computer at home probably couldn't run it or was being used for something else. The family computer was being tied up with work or with whatever. So we would pay $1 to $2 an hour and go sit here from 3 p.m. when school got out to, you know, 10 p.m., 11 p.m., just playing games all day. Yeah, that was for sure probably the biggest time suck that video games has ever put onto my life. Just not enough hours in the day as a kid between soccer practice and video games. There probably was a limit, though, on what games we could play. There were never really any mature games in our house up until like Grand Theft Auto 3, probably.
So you skipped over the whole Leisure Suit Larry series, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, are those Sierra properties?
Yeah.
My dad actually worked for Sierra Online for a while, and I think probably purposefully left those out of our house to make sure that did not happen.
It wasn't playtesting
those. Did you guys have?
Oh, I had a friend who somehow got copies of those. I never actually owned them myself, and it was like going over, you know, kind of like the whatever grade 3 kid who finds a piece of a Playboy magazine at the whatever
and like underneath the bed and of course,
and so it's like, oh my goodness, what are we gonna see here? And you're like terrified out of your mind at what you're gonna actually find out, and it's all just a bunch of dirty jokes and pixelated nothingness, right? So
but
it was the Sierra Online games. That's on the PC, on the computer gaming side. It was that, those were a lot of fun. I remember playing Police Quest, Police Quest, Space Quest, King's Quest, all those games.
Yep.
Spending hours and hours and hours. That's what I don't remember now as a parent. I don't remember, and I have to go back and find out from my parents. They must have had some sort of limit, but in my mind, I was like, I just played for hours and hours and never had to, like, I don't remember having the same kind of, I'll say, disagreements that we sometimes have with our kids about when it's time to stop. And maybe because I'm remembering, you know, my older years, the teenage years of playing video games where it was kind of a little more autonomous or left to your own devices kind of thing, versus if I had been, had access the same way that my kids do now to, you know, an iPhone, an Xbox, a computer at 8 or whatever. Obviously, there would have been potentially, or could have been potentially, a few more limitations in terms of how often. But when it's like, it's the one TV, it's the family TV, and dad wants to watch the hockey game or whatever, and so then you have to stop, and there isn't any more options for video games. You have to go do something else. Whereas these days, there is like, well, I'll just flip over to the iPad or flip over to the whatever.
Yeah. No, that's exactly it. Now, I think try and quell some of that stuff, they are putting in parental controls and giving you the ability to actually limit the time that people are in front of the TV and stuff. I might even put my own parental controls on myself at this point, because
it's actually good. Like Microsoft with the Xbox stuff, I'm sure there's something on the PlayStation side. I think that's what you're in the PlayStation world, right? On the console side.
So things just changed yesterday. Oh, I've got both.
Breaking news.
Yeah. Oh, it is. It is super breaking news. Yeah. When you're gifted an Xbox One as a groomsman gift from one of your best friends that used to play video games with back in elementary school.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's that's kind of how deep the rabbit hole goes for me.
He's a keeper.
Yeah. Right. I know. Oh, you should see the ring.
The Xbox ring. So so did you get any games with it?
Oh my gosh. Like the Red Ring of Death. Exactly. Chris, come on. Come on, man.
Set you up. Yeah.
You did. Yep.
What games did you get with it, or what have you? I guess
Battlefield 1. So it took, oh my gosh, what was it, like 80 gig? No, it was probably 55 gigs.
Yeah.
Took maybe 2 hours yesterday to download 55 gigs of a game. Pretty great so far. The way that game opens up is pretty cool. It says, like, the point is not to survive. Like, don't expect to survive. Just play through these. And it takes you through these different World War One scenarios where you play as different characters briefly, like between 15 and 30 seconds, where you're on the front lines of World War One and just shooting the crap out of people and dying constantly. And it'll show, like, the name of the person and how long they lived, you know, 1889 to, you know, the year 1914 or whatever it was. And that's sort of like the tutorial missions to get you to wet your palate a bit on, like, what this game is going to be like. And it was both intense control wise, like trying to acclimate myself to a first person shooter, but also emotionally kind of tolling a bit, because it would show names that looked legitimate, could be real even. And it played this somber music on piano that just felt like, man, I don't know if I can get through this. It very emotionally taxing video games are these days.
Yeah, I actually have that game for the Xbox as well. And I was surprised how in-depth. I'll actually go to my parents' house sometimes to play the video games, just because that one especially is kind of like quite over the top in terms of, not over the top by today's standards, I guess, for video games, but definitely graphically gory, you know, violent, all that kind of stuff. But in a non, like you said, I feel like in a non-glorifying way. If someone just watched you playing it for 2 minutes, they'd think it's just like everything else. But it feels like they at least had the intentions of showing what war is like and what it can mean. So, like, as an 18-year-old, hopefully, if you're playing that, you think, oh wow, like an 18-year-old just literally died, you know, in war, and that would have happened to me if I had been alive in 1914, kind of thing, likely.
Right.
But yeah, the scope of the game is like insane, how you go from land, sea, air. There was I don't know if you'll get to it eventually, probably, if I don't imagine you're there yet, because I think it's quite a few hours into the game, but where you're actually like flying. Land somehow, I forget exactly what the scenario is, but you get on top of a Zeppelin flying over London. And so, like, you're a guy running around on the Zeppelin trying to dismantle the whatever the guns are on it or something like that, fighting off the Germans. But down below, you can see, like, the clouds are going by, and you can see, like, London below you, and planes are flying around. And it's one of those games that it definitely, like, in, like I was saying, when I go to my parents' house, bigger screen TV, I can crank it up and not worry about waking anybody up. That's when I think they have like a multiplayer component to it too. And I don't know, almost don't want to play multiplayer with it, because it feels a little bit then like actually running around killing people.
Yeah, the whole Battlefield series, I feel like, just like Call of Duty, is very much based on the fact that they do have multiplayer, and that you can just sort of jump in and shoot the heck out of someone, because that's what the franchise is based on.
Yeah.
The way that Battlefield 1 is trying to differentiate itself is in the storyline, and having just played through the tutorial only, I can tell that there's a little more thought put into, like, what this meant for wars nowadays and what that means to even like a little bit of self-awareness on what that means to its franchise and like the respects that it kind of has to pay to itself for the information and the like for the portrayal of this particular war that it's making money off of. I don't know. It gets a little meta, yeah. I suppose.
Yeah.
But I definitely do not surround myself with hyper cinematic video games all the time. Probably Mass Effect would have been the one prior to this that I really sunk a lot of time into. Mass Effect 1, 2 on the regular Xbox 360. Sunk a lot of time into that one and the story and stuff, which is very, very different from Battlefield 1. But the rest of my time is really just with like first-person shooters. I've been playing a lot of, I think we talked about last time, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. I have probably put close to 12 hours or more into a game called Paragon, which is a MOBA genre game. It's sort of like a tower I don't know what it stands for. It's a tower defense game. Yeah, everyone says it's a MOBA. I don't know. Okay, I guess all the game slang I am not aware of. Maybe that's part of the culture that I don't feel like I dug far enough into it, especially nowadays, to really feel welcome in places like Twitch or
yeah.
Really anywhere. I probably would not do well at E3 or places like that. I just don't know enough. But I've been playing Paragon. It's a free-to-play game from Epic Games. And that's been fun. I play with a big group of friends over the internet that actually the fine gentleman who sent me the Xbox, I play with him. So
is that a console game, or that's a PC or Mac or whatever?
It's actually cross-platform, which is really cool. You can play on PlayStation or computer, maybe Xbox as well. But you can all connect to the same server and play cross-platform, kind of like the way that Rocket League works.
Right. Another fun one.
Yeah. Yeah. Really fun one. So I guess a lot of my gaming is done still with the same folks that I have played with for the last 20 years, which is it's a strange feeling. It's really weird to think about, but I'm not real into the whole Destiny 2, like, let me go find a clan and join up and see what their ideology is.
Yeah.
That's not how I'm going to conduct myself gaming wise.
More casual with people, you know, real world wise that
I'm a cash gamer.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a acronym for that. I can tell you from experience that there isn't a lot of fun in playing like a game. I love playing like a sports game, like a hockey game or whatever on the consoles, and playing against some random person in a one-on-one game and having them likely be a 10-year-old kid in Sweden or wherever, and they just crush you, and so you come away from it feeling like worthless and as a inferior human just because somebody knows how to toe drag and do amazing shots in hockey that they run rampant over you. Somehow that defeats or destroys your self-esteem as a human being. But
it's just, I mean, especially if you've got like the mic turned on or you are looking at chat like, noob, whatever. You hear this voice that is just like, man, what have I done? What am I doing?
I will confess to having just shut off the Xbox a couple times in frustration. It's just like, what am I doing?
Yeah, mid-celebration. Yeah.
It's already 6-1 in the first period with 10 minutes to go. This is not going to get any better. We had one of the questions was that we were sort of going to talk about, which I think we've sort of talked about, is what are you playing right now? And actually, when I was thinking about that, my immediate response would have been like hockey, and then Battlefield 1 is sort of a secondary, and Overwatch is another fun one on the console on the Xbox that I play. But actually, where I probably, if I actually was honest about my time, I ended up playing a lot of Clash Royale on the iPhone, which it's, I don't know if you're familiar with the series. There's like, they have Clash of Clans. It looks in the App Store, it looks like a generic game. And somehow I got hooked onto this one. Originally it was Clash of clans that I got connected with and was playing, and kind of through my son, we kind of played it together. And then Clash Royale came out, and it's kind of like this game where you're, I forget what the, again, there's probably an acronym for it, but you're kind of like sending troops to battle, sort of one against one, and you have your side, they have their side, kind of like tower defense in a sense. But once the tower is down, then you can drop troops onto that side of the field or whatever. Anyways, and there's all different types, and it's kind of like the wizards and warlocks and whatever, that kind of motif. But it's a really fun kind of strategy game, because there is different levels of characters, and you kind of figure out what strategy works. There's air units and ground units and all that kind of stuff. And for whatever reason, it's kind of hooked me for the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. I haven't given them a cent of money, but it's just kind of a easy one to pop into. You play a game, it lasts 3 minutes or so, and then you're done. And they have the whole like getting chests that rewards you with upgrades, and that whole thing, that's to where they try and get you to buy gems or whatever to buy better chests and upgrade your things. And it's kind of a fun, quick, easy game to duck into and duck out of, without, you know, giving up hours and hours of a day on something like Battlefield, where obviously it takes a little more commitment, time commitment anyways, to get into. So on mobile, that's, there's lots of really great games I know on iPhone, and like games that kind of draw you in. And but I find my mobile gaming is usually like a quick thing, if I'm waiting somewhere, or I'm waiting for, you know, a file to export or something and just need a break or something like that. And it's kind of like, I just want to be able to play a 3 to 5 minute thing and then put it back, put it down and go back to work, or go back to watching my kid play soccer or whatever I'm supposed to be doing.
Right. Let's put it out there. This is a game that you play when you're on the toilet,
right?
Basically. Yeah. That's all. That's all minutes. This is for. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those like free to play games. Is it kind of covered in ads, or do you get bonuses for watching ads?
No, that's what's nice about it. Is it purely? It's based on like, and they've obviously figured out the right level of, you know, buy in game upgrades, in app purchases, or whatever, of, you know, gems and things to like upgrade your guy. And so somehow it feels like a little more intellectual than something like, what was that? Like, not Bejeweled, but the popular, really popular one that was all about, Bedazzled, yeah.
Bejeweled?
No, that's...
I don't think Bejeweled isn't a free-to-play game. Well, I mean, it is free-to-play, but I don't think it was one of those, like,
no, it's, I'm sure
you put it in an app and it just covers you in ads.
It's like some sort of Jewel game thing.
Anyway, yeah.
But it's not like that. It's more, there is a bit of strategy to it, which I appreciate, but not so much that you're like sucked in and you have to sit there for hours trying to figure out, and it's impossible. Like you can, there's not so much strategy that you can't get lucky sometimes, I guess, and win a game and not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the old Zynga games, right? The games that you would either play on Facebook,
right,
in some sort of like mashed together table cell thing, browser table. And on your phone, I think Zynga just destroyed that early mobile game market. I do remember playing a lot of those when they first came out. Mafia Wars, I think, was one. Yeah, it's just these games are hard to want to like. I want to like them. I want to say, like, man, look how much time and effort as a product, let's say,
right,
look how much time and effort was put into this. A lot of thought they put out frequent updates. A game that I'm playing right now, since you brought that up on the mobile side, is a game called Cats the Game. Of course it is. So Cats the Game is an acronym. I'm going to pull it up real quick here. Crash Arena Turbo Stars is what it's called. And you create these little like battle bot robots that are piloted by cats, and they fight each other, and that's it. That's really all you do. You open up loot crates and get more parts and try and beat the heck out of these cats.
See, what did video games do before loot crates came along? Because that's like every single game.
In-app purchases and loot. Yeah. To downloadable content. I mean,
even Battlefield has that. I don't know if you've seen on the multiplayer side. It's like, open up your loot crate. It's like upgraded M16 or whatever. Like on the multiplayer side.
Activate these cards, which give you an upgrade when you do have an upgrade of it. Like, what? 3 levels of like payment options to be able to upgrade my player. Like, why is there this complexity? And Cats for sure has that exact level. I believe there are three different types of currency in the game that you earn differently by selling parts and opening loot crates and things like that. It's pretty ridiculous that I would ever be interested in sucking time into this at all. But there's something about watching these cats blow up that is thoroughly therapeutic.
And yet here we are.
and yet here we are. I've played through the entire game almost twice now. And yeah, it is one of those where you play against other people. So maybe there's a little bit of that, like, it's the differentiator between the old console games where they had no downloadable content. You only had local multiplayer, and games today where it's all about connecting you to random people that you try to beat the heck out of either on the hockey court, or right. That's where,
it's hockey
on court. On the hockey court or, on the battlefield here with the cats.
Okay, so listener homework and homework for Kyle and I think for the next episode is, I will try out Cats. You will try out Clash Royale. Not that we're becoming a video game review show, but in our brief pre-show segments, we will come back together and discuss how each of us has fared in the respective addiction of the other, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. The neat thing about Cats, I would say, if we're just going to continue down this road a bit, is that
nobody's judging you, Kyle. You don't have to.
I know. I feel like I need to justify this. you can connect it to Facebook if you'd like and play against the bot and see the bot of your Facebook friends. I can see that no one else on my Facebook group has this game at all. So I feel like this is not one that really crossed anyone's radar. But it's still one of those free-to-play games that every now and again it'll display ads if you want to make stuff go faster, if you want to open up those loot crates faster.
Right.
It treats ads as a reward system, so it's kind of feels a bit icky in that way, which is maybe that's why people are so receptive to Nintendo putting out. I'm bringing it all the way back. Maybe that's why people are so receptive to Nintendo putting out one of these retro consoles now that there's no Ethernet port. It doesn't have a Wi-Fi chip in there. You're going to boot that up. Yes, there are no cartridges for you to blow into, but it's all just right there. It's local multiplayer. There are no ads. The games are as you remember them, and they just work. You have ownership over the thing that you just purchased in perpetuity. They can't take it away. They can't take it out of the app store. They don't shut down the servers. It's not complex. It just is the way it is. And maybe folks want that these days. Maybe they need a little bit more. Maybe it's not just nostalgia. Maybe it truly is. People need a little bit of simplicity in their gameplay.
Wow. I think that's if this was some sort of inspirational podcast, that would be a perfect spot to end.
Just do it.
Just
do it. Just do it
in America.
Don't sit there and not play any free to play games. Just download Clash Royale and play it. I'm actually sending it to my device right now.
Yeah, I just downloaded Cats too. So we're
all right.
We're ready to.
I like this idea. I really like the idea of getting a little bit of homework. Maybe these aren't too different. Maybe they are super different. But I've never played a Clash Royale game.
Yeah, it's not high contrast. It's moderate contrast.
We could call it 50 Shades of Grey, but I feel like we would be getting into a completely different genre.
That's where you're blowing on the cartridges.